Good afternoon. This is the Thursday, November 1st, 2018 session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll. And I did not realize my mallet was as heavy as it is today. Sorry, Commissioner Fritz.
Here, we swapped his mallet out for a hammer.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
The mayor will be taking part in some anger management programming after council today. Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Wheeler.
You know, I got to just say this. It turns out that working out is finally paying off for me. Here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The city represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during the city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you very much. Carla, we have one item today. Could you please read it?
Yes, 1135. Adopt the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project Preferred Alternative and Direct Further Actions.
Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. The proposed action before Council today is to adopt the preferred alternative for the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Transit Project, along with supportive actions to assure the project is developed in a manner that addresses key issues and opportunities in Portland. With the Southwest Corridor project, we have an opportunity to deliver high-capacity transit service and safety improvements to one of the most congested parts of our region. In doing so, we can make significant strides in achieving our climate goals and provide real transportation access to jobs and opportunity. That's a lot of opportunity in these talking points. Our favorite word today, word of the day, opportunity for all Portlanders. It's not often we get to make such transformative investments. The Southwest Corridor Transit Route is the final planned leg of our regional transit network, and our partners to the west and we have been waiting for this improvement for many years. The improved connectivity for Portlanders and those living or working in Tigard, Tualatin, and beyond will be a buffer against the traffic congestion that we know will continue to grow with our population. This corridor has a thriving education sector populated by PSU, OHSU, NUNM, and PCC. These institutions provide a diverse range of workforce and professional service training for people in this region. Improved transit access between these schools will encourage collaborative offerings and allow students to spend more time on campus and less time on the road. There are many important project elements to be evaluated and refined in the weeks and months and probably years ahead, such as connections to Markham Hill, the route through the Crossroads area, balancing the size of park and ride lots, improving access to transit stations for pedestrians and cyclists, and developing the Ross Island Bridgehead project, among others. One of my favorite opportunities. As we've done on all prior light rail transit projects, we will be asking the project team to develop a conceptual design report that studies issues and concerns and identifies opportunities in partnership with our Portland neighborhoods in preparation for future design phases. This is an essential next step in moving the project forward. Without protections, large capital projects risk actual displacement of housing and gentrification. In 2016, this council directed the development of an equitable housing strategy for the corridor to get ahead of issues we've experienced in the past. I've stated before that commitment to a housing strategy is essential before implementing this transit project, and I would not support it without it. I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the vital work of the Southwest Corridor Equity and Housing Advisory Group. They've come up with an amazing plan, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work with them. So today, I'm happy to announce that the cities of Portland and Tigard, with Washington County Metro and TriMet, have agreed to work together to promote affordable housing, business stabilization, and other development in the corridor in conjunction with light rail, something that will truly move us forward in terms of livability and equity. Now I'd like to invite Councillor Bob Stacey from Metro and Doug Kelsey, TriMet's general manager, to provide some opening remarks before the staff presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good afternoon. And thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for that introduction, which allows me to dispense with my talking points. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to provide some words of encouragement for what I think is a very important decision, which is only partially made. Your action on the preferred alignment is the first of many steps which the commissioner has outlined. In fact, the commissioner is the third member of this council that I've had the pleasure to work with as co-chair of the steering committee. I apologize. I'm Bob Stacey, Metro Councilor for District 6. I'm here representing the Metro Council. Commissioner Saltzman and I had a term together, former Commissioner Novick. I've been co-chair of this committee for 6 years, and it's been around for 7 years. And as the commissioner says, it'll be more years before the detailed work necessary to ensure that this alignment decision becomes a carefully designed community amenity lie ahead of us. Again, as Commissioner Udaly said, the region is growing rapidly, and that growth will be felt in the Southwest Corridor through Portland into Tigard and Tualatin. And this transportation project can guide that development and will encourage some of it to occur in Southwest. We know that transportation investment leads to growth in property value, and that can lead to displacement of small businesses and low-income households. There are, at most recent count, some 11,000 homes that are affordable to low-income households in the corridor. We are committed, as obviously the city is as well, to ensuring that we can preserve and expand upon that supply as development occurs in the future with this transit investment. The city's and our partnership in developing an equitable housing equitable development strategy and housing strategy is critical to avoiding the displacement that has occurred in past public investments for transportation purposes. On Tuesday of next week, the voters of our region will have an opportunity to support the regional affordable housing bond, and Metro is committed to ensuring that the appropriate proportion of those funds are spent on maintaining and increasing the supply of affordable housing in this corridor. This is probably my last occasion, other than my vote on the Metro Council, as steering committee co-chair, because we're passing the baton on this project to TriMet. We've come through the planning stage. The final design and implementation will be led by TriMet, but with the full participation of participating communities. On November 15th, with your affirmative vote today, the Metro Council is poised to approve this locally preferred alternative and forward it on to our partners. Thanks very much. I have to scoot to my own council meeting, which also began at 2 p.m., so forgive me if I now depart unless you have a question for me.
Colleagues? Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you.
Appreciate your presence.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon. My name is Doug Kelsey. I'm the general manager with TriMet. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for your comments, Mayor Wheeler, and commissioners. as Bob noted, the region's growing quickly, and so is the Southwest Corridor. The estimates have this corridor growing with 70,000 people and 65,000 jobs by 2035. The models, they also show that I-5 between Portland and Tigard will be congested up to 17 hours per day by that point. By 2035, the Southwest Corridor Light Rail is projected to carry approximately 43,000 daily rail riders. In the years ahead, it will only grow from there. It's essential for projects of this complexity and size that we partner together, and I believe we are doing just that. This is one of the largest infrastructure projects in this region's history, and yes, it is a complex one. We are currently having designed just approximately the 5% level. There's an immense amount more to go. However, in the next few years, we will all be needing to work equally closely together with the community on the other 95% to create the best new rapid transit project this region has ever seen. That's why TriMet is extremely appreciative of Metro's leadership to get us this far. It's taken many years, as Commissioner Stacey has noted, but it is, again, only at the 5% mark with an immense amount to go. I would also like to thank Commissioner Saltzman for your helping to guide the project to where we are today. Through your role in the steering committee and the LPA recommendation, it really is greatly appreciated. And for those in the audience and at home, it is often not understood the complexity to help everybody across the finish line to points like today. Thank you so much. I also want to thank the City of Portland staff. They have been tremendously steadfast in their advocacy for the people of Portland. In front and behind the scenes, the city's land use vision and the transportation project that benefits all modes of travel, not just rail, as we have an integrated system. I would also like to especially thank Teresa Boyle. She's worked with TriMet for many years. This is not her first project. This is, in fact, her fifth light rail project. And she and all the city staff do a fantastic job, trust me, on the other side, representing TriMet's and the City of Portland's interests, but particularly the City of Portland's interests. One of the indications of the continued success of the partnerships is the MOU on affordable housing, an important cornerstone. This represents extensive collaboration among your bureaus, TriMet, Metro, to help address the rising housing costs in this region and the complexities that come with it. This agreement was born out of the inclusive work that Metro facilitated to advance an equitable housing strategy. And it included many city bureaus and their directors, Chris Warner from PBOT, Joe Zender with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Shannon Callahan from the Housing Bureau, and Kimberly Branham from Prosper Portland. Each represented vigorously and brought important considerations to this agreement. I would like to thank these real professionals for making this agreement happen. It really does take a village. We look forward to continuing the work with the City of Portland and other regional partners as we engage in the community in advancing this project design as we get ready ultimately to go for federal funding as we compete for those dollars like never before. Staff will be up next here shortly to outline the project and to address specific questions you may have. Personally, having lived in other regions, this is a really exciting time. It's a challenging time, but one I think will be memorable for this city and for this region. Thank you so much for considering today's efforts.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you, Mr. Kelsey. And now I want to invite our staff team up to the table.
We're a four-chair team today.
I'm Teresa Boyle with Transportation. I'm the city's manager for the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project. With me today are staff from Metro and TriMet and our own Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, who also will have a part in this presentation. They'll introduce themselves when it's their turn. So we'll be doing, as staff, project overview, talking a little bit about the land use and the perspective that provides us on the project. We have a work plan to discuss and some information for you on next steps. There will be a public testimony moment, and we have some invited testimony. I will be calling the invited testimony, and then we'll step down for public testimony, and then we can come back for questions. So we have a lot going on today and in the coming months. Wanted to bring to your attention the fact that we will be back next week talking about the jurisdictional transfer of Highway 99 West, Barber Boulevard. Metro Council has actions to take in November, and then early in 2019, we will be establishing a steering committee and our community advisory committee. We're going to be in what's called the project development phase. This is really a workhorse moment for the team. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of input and feedback to get from our Citizens Advisory Committee. The steering committee is going to be making decisions, and we'll be developing all of it and publishing it in a conceptual design report and publishing an EIS, FEIS, excuse me. So big picture, here's where we are. Today.
Teresa, could you explain all the acronyms as you go along, please?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
FEIS.
I ran out of time on my slide. FEIS is Final Environmental Impact Statement. Conceptual Design Report, I will often probably be referring to it as a CDR. I'll do my best to define up front. In early 2020, we expect to be asked to commit our share of local match to finance the project. And if we hit all of these other marks, our projection would be that we could open this light rail for service in 2027. We talked on Division Transit a few months ago with you about it being synchronized swimming. This is really more of the open water marathon swim, and I think we're about 25% of the way into it. Got a long ways to go. Next up will be staff from Metro and TriMet.
Good afternoon. I'm Malou Wilkinson, Investment Areas Manager at Metro, and I'm happy to be here today. I am going to start. How do I do it? Do I click like that? Nope.
Let me get you out of there.
Thank you. Sorry. All right. Are you just going to operate?
I'm just going to do it.
So I'd like to start just by stepping back and reminding us all that we began this look at high-capacity transit in the Southwest Corridor really as part of implementing the 2040 growth concept and our regional vision. And this vision includes protecting farms and forests and natural areas, focusing development in town centers, along main streets, in employment areas, and investing in the transportation that supports the people being able to move around in the region that we all enjoy and live in today. So as you heard from Councillor Stacey and from Doug Kelsey, this part of our region is really growing fast. We are expecting 70,000 more people in the Southwest Corridor, which goes from Portland to Sherwood by 2035. It's not only a place where there are a lot of people, there are a lot of jobs. This is really a job center of our region, and we have many jobs there right now. We're expecting even more to be there in the future. And most of the people who work in communities in the Southwest Corridor don't live in those same communities. For example, in Tualatin, 93% of workers live outside of Tualatin, and they're just moving around. And by 2035, we're expecting more than 255,000 people to be working in the Southwest Corridor, and we want to be sure that people from across the region can get to those jobs. So the infrastructure in parts of the Southwest Corridor isn't really supporting the people who live there today all the time. That infrastructure will be even more taxed as we anticipate the future growth in the area. This is just an example of infrastructure in the Southwest Corridor on Barber Boulevard. 55% of it doesn't have a sidewalk on both sides. This is something that would be addressed with the Southwest Corridor Light Rail Project. So can you go back one?
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Oh, wait.
I'm out of order.
So can we go to this one?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. I switched the order on Teresa. So when we started this project in 2011, we started it with the direction of the Metro Council and the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation that identified the Southwest Corridor as a top priority for regional high-capacity transit investment. In 2011, in October, the steering committee met for the first time. That means they've been meeting for 7 years, almost monthly. There were 12 members of the steering committee representing 11 agencies and jurisdictions. And when we started, we really started with the land use. We asked the cities to work with their community and identify the places where we anticipated future growth to occur. And so on that map that you see, those circles are the places that the community identified for future growth. And you can also see on that map, there's a dashed line that shows the Southwest Corridor Light Rail project. That clearly doesn't connect all of those circles on the map. And so, Teresa, we're going to have to work together here. The steering committee defined in 2013 a shared investment strategy. This shared investment strategy was endorsed by all of the project partners, and that the SIS, as we like to call it, because we love acronyms. Apologies, Commissioner Fritz, and this is an acronym that we really liked, which we defined a shared investment strategy to support the love being the land use vision, and this strategy included all types of transportation investments to enable people to better walk, bike, drive, move freight, and ride transit. It also included green projects, and we actually have an inventory of habitat and parks investments in the Southwest Corridor that crosses jurisdictional boundaries that we never had before, and that's something that we don't talk about much now, but it's a resource that our partners out there can draw from even today. One of the outcomes of the shared investment strategy was actually the bus line 97 that TriMet put in place to connect downtown Sherwood with downtown Tualatin, that on Tualatin-Sherwood Highway, that was never there before. So that was a relatively short term, it felt short term at the time, it's been a while now, outcome. So with that, if we can go to the map, that one, nope, yep. So this map here, one of the centerpieces of the shared investment strategy, really was a major transit investment. So what you can see on this map is the region's high-capacity transit network. In dotted lines, you have the Southwest Corridor, and you have Division Transit Project. And you can see on that map that that helps fill in a missing part of our high-capacity transit network. You might be able to see on your screens the network behind of the local transit service that is also obviously critical to allow people to move around. The other thing that you'll see on this map is that it doesn't show city boundaries, it shows places. These might not be the places you want to go or that everybody would want to go, but it's representing a concept that people really, they care about the places that they want to get to, either to work or to play, to watch a game, to go to school. And so that's what we're trying to serve, are the people who are trying to move around the places. So now if we can go to the picture of the person. Awesome. And so what we're aiming to do with these kinds of investments is really give people the freedom to choose how they move around. And one person is Admira here in this photo, who is training right now for a new career at OHSU, Oregon Health Sciences University, moving from cleaning operating rooms to being a pharmacy technician. And this will really help her change the things that she's able to do with her family. She's a single mother. And this is one of the pieces of the Southwest Corridor Equitable Development Strategy that we're working on right now, along with the transit project. So now the CAC. Perfect. So our process started with land use, as I said, and it's focused on both how we serve and how we engage people. Over the last 7 years, we've had thousands of interactions with people, both informal and formal opportunities. For the last year and a half, for the focused work that we've been doing to get to a locally preferred alternative, we convened a community advisory committee. We had a very competitive application process. There were over 40, I think it was actually close to 60, but I couldn't remember the number, applied to be on the community advisory committee. We only had 19 positions. And so those 19 positions represented people in Portland, Tigard, Tualatin, and Washington County. It included people from businesses, community groups, and institutions. There were 14 monthly meetings. These meetings started out being 2 hours long, but we were asked to have them be longer. They were 2.5, sometimes 3 hours long. These people really worked very hard to understand the issues related to choosing an alignment for the light rail project. They really tried to understand. I think they got a great sense of how hard it is to make these decisions, and there are so many factors to weigh. And despite that, they came to a consensus on the locally preferred alternative that they recommended to the steering committee in August. And so that group, I just want to express a huge amount of appreciation for all the people who served on that CAC, and also to Aaron Key from Metro, who managed that. I just want to say a little bit more about the engagement that we did, because the Community Advisory Committee engaged those 19 people who were communicating with those that they represent. But we also sent out, we sent letters to businesses and individuals throughout the Southwest Corridor. We had our documents for the draft environmental impact statement online and in offices and libraries for people who wanted to actually thumb through a hard copy and didn't want to print it. We had open houses. We had informational hours with staff at libraries. We had 3 public hearings. We did. We blasted out through email and social media information about the project. We wanted everybody who could pay attention to learn about it. We had advertisements in newspapers, and we were available to go to neighborhood associations and business organizations to present and answer questions. And I want to just tell you a little bit about a culturally specific testimony event that we had in Tigard in partnership with Unite Oregon. So we worked with Unite, and we had a 3-hour event where the first part was a bilingual presentation about the draft environmental impact statement, the information in it, and the initial route proposal that was there. After the presentation, we broke into small groups. We worked with the attendees to train them how to provide effective testimony to decision makers, whether it was written or orally. I think it can be anxiety-inducing to only have 3 minutes to provide the information that you want to convey to those who are making decisions. And then once we'd trained them, we had Councillor Stacey and Councillor Dirksen, who co-chaired the Metro Southwest Corridor Steering Committee, there to accept public testimony from those who had just been trained in a comfortable environment. And we really, it worked well for us. We would like to be able to do more events like that in the future. And so I'd like to end with emphasizing that as we move just one step closer, as Teresa said, it's a long marathon swim through open water, one step closer to investing in the Southwest Corridor Light Rail, it's really critical that we focus on the end goal that we're all working towards, which is with our 2040 regional vision, our goal is inclusive growth. Our goal is that we have inclusive growth through equitable development so that all people can enjoy the types of investments that we're making throughout the region and that you're helping us with here today. That includes housing, and you already heard quite a bit about the housing. We so appreciate the work that Portland and Tigard did together and the equitable housing strategy that you adopted last month. TriMet's commitments on housing around stations throughout the region. And as you heard Councillor Stacey mention, we might potentially have a new tool to work with in a couple weeks. Our goal is to not just focus on housing, but also have workforce development and business stabilization programs as part of our equitable development strategy that we're collaborating with our agency partners and our community partners to develop right now. We have some pilot programs. One of them is a partnership with Oregon Health Sciences University and the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization that is helping Admira, who you saw in the photo earlier, move from a lower paid job to a higher paid job. And so it's really critical that we do this work in coordination with the light rail project so that we are aiming towards inclusive growth as people continue to come to this region that we all live in and love. And so Dave's going to tell you more about the actual light rail project.
Thanks, Malou. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Dave Unsworth. I'm TriMet's Project Director of Project Development and Permitting. I'm really excited to be here today.
Thank you.
I'm going to hopefully succinctly tell you why this is a great project and the path, the many options and alignments that we took to get here. But really, what we're really trying to do with this project is build low-cost transportation that is reliable and gets people to where they need to go. And so if you look at the first bubble there, you see 2 bubbles on the lower left side. What we note here is Tigard, Tualatin, and City of Portland have a reverse commute. There's as many people going out to the high-paying jobs in Tigard and Tualatin as there are people coming to downtown and working in those areas. So this is why it works very well for us. We're expecting about 43,000 rides per day in the year 2035. By addressing congestion, about one every five people heading south in the PM peak are going to be on light rail. So that takes pressure off of I-5. That takes pressure off of Barber Boulevard as we look at it. As we look to address our climate smart goals, if you are our climate action goals, this is one of the key things. Get people on reliable transit service out of their cars. Connect them to the communities. And connections are what we do well. If you look at the orange line, it's making sure that we connect people, we build sidewalks, and we imagine how that street, Barber Boulevard, is going to be redone. And we build off of the great work the city of Portland has done with the Barber Concept Plan. Infill is part of that, transit-oriented development, and probably with this project, more affordable transportation-oriented development. So it's taken us a long time to get here. Hopefully, it'll be a faster trip. It will be a faster trip from Bridgeport into downtown Portland in the future, in comparison to cars. So we're expecting it's about 30 minutes to be on a train that takes you by all those station opportunities as you go by there. 2035, we're projecting on a normal day, which there are fewer and fewer of those, it's 29 minutes to get there from a car to downtown Portland. What we know about I-5, when we see more and more people come in, the freeway, the roadways get more fragile, so you better plan for twice that time, 58, 60 minutes, in order to make sure you're getting there on time. So it's that fast, reliable service that we think is really important. Next one. Access. So this is really about connecting people to jobs, and I'm not going to go through all the slide, but with light rail, you provide in 30 minutes 70% more access for households to jobs and to other locations. So we're making it faster, making it more reliable for people to get to connect to the places that they want to go, whether it's education, whether it's a job, whether it's getting home at night. Next one. The marathon began really in 2013. We started with 60 different alignments where we have gone through whittling that down with a very good public involvement process where we've been engaged with people all the way down the route. The pros, the cons, the pluses, the minuses, you weigh all of those to try and figure out what is the best set of alignments that should move forward. And really, that's what we're here today. We think, we hope, and we've heard with unanimous recommendations from the steering committee and the CAC that we think you've got it pretty well at this 5% level engineering. Let's go back to the next one. It really started with, is Bus Rapid Transit, BRT, another acronym for you? We've got a quarter. Every time we do an acronym, we ought to be looking at local funding for the project. Light rail, we compared the pros and cons of that and what we realized with Bus Rapid Transit. By the time you had actually built it 10 years after, you're really at capacity, and was that the right? And it wasn't as much of a savings. We also looked at tunnels. We looked at tunnels under Markham Hill. We looked under tunnels under PCC. The determination was extend it as far south as you can. Get that benefit. Connect to all those other centers. The cost of a tunnel really would make you stop much, much shorter than you really would like to go. It's really more than light rail, and you've heard part of this before. It's the connection up to Markham Hill, the 18,000, 19,000 people that want to go up there every day. Can you make it a shorter, more reliable connection to them? We have a shared transitway. I think you know this, on the Tillicum Crossing. Buses that are coming in from Gresham, from East County, get a faster way in downtown. So for about 1.3 miles, they share the bridge. They share the alignment with light rail and streetcars, so they get through that. Same thing for buses coming in from Hillsdale. We'll see a shared transitway where those buses actually operate on the bus line and get into downtown faster. PCC is a really important connection. So if you're going to start out and you can't afford a four-year college, that's where you're going to start out with your training. We've got to do a great job of connecting to it. A tunnel would have done that. The cost was too much. We're looking for other opportunities through shuttles and improving 53rd Avenue to connect to that. Sidewalks. So Malou showed you a snapshot of 55% of Barber Boulevard doesn't have sidewalks. This project will fill in those gaps, and we'll do it where bikes are protected and we have safe and secure sidewalks as we move forward. The third alternative, this is the moment today, is really about after we've whittled down to those 60 to this most promising alignments. What do we base that on? First was the problem statement. What's the purpose and need of the project we're doing? We had a draft environmental impact statement that looked at the pros, the cons, the trade-offs for that. We had significant public comment, not only through the CAC, but open houses. I spent many nights away, probably a good thing at sometimes, having those conversations. A lot of agency input. And we also are, it's a take-home exam. We know that our Federal Transit Administration, we're competing against projects in Seattle, Los Angeles, Denver, and other locations. So we understand that we've got to do some work to make sure it's ready and it's a cost-effective, good project. Now I'm going to quickly walk through some of the choices that were made here. On inner Portland segment, we had two different options, either being on NATO Parkway or being on Barbara Boulevard. Barbara Boulevard was less expensive, it was faster, and it had a lot fewer impacts on the historic neighborhood that we go through there. It had probably a better connection up to Markham Hill. For those reasons, we chose to move that forward. Also, that shared transitway, you see the words, the woods, basically from about that location comes in and connects into downtown Portland. Now, I'll remind you, much like the orange line that we connected to the yellow line, this line, we haven't had a color for it, but it will connect into the green line that comes in from East County, comes through downtown Portland, and will continue down further south, making that a better connectivity than there is currently today.
Can you just leave it, the green line?
Pardon me?
Why not just extend the green
line? It's more complicated than that, I'm afraid, and I'm not in charge of picking the colors, but I'd be with you if I got to choose that. I'll take that back.
I've been lobbying for a purple line for 15 years, I just want to say.
And after five lines, maybe you get to choose one, right? So, but I'll let you guys sort it out. The Vermont and Newberry Viaducts currently today, ODOT owns that roadway. That precludes really very safe bicycle and sidewalk activity is very narrow. We expect to replace those. And so as a result, from the Barber Transit Center all the way into downtown, there'll be wide sidewalks that address those connections that need to be made. This is not quite outer Portland, but essentially the next section out, and I would say from Fred Meyers, which is Custer, you can see where the stations are. We had two different choices, to be adjacent to I-5 and impacting some of the ramps and having stations that weren't well celebrated, that weren't as safe and visible, and probably didn't embrace the Barber concept plan as well. The steering committee unanimously with the CAC said, you should be in the center of Barber Boulevard. We have work to do on this project. Doug said we're at 5%. That's probably right. And I would point one of the first places they have work to do is around the Barber Transit Center. How do we get over the crossroads? We had a meeting two nights ago that focused on that. You may hear more about that later. We know we have more work to do on that, and we're all in on doing that. So those are the alignments as we look at moving further south. The connection up to PCC, whether it's a bus shuttle or something else, as we look at improving access on 53rd Avenue is pretty important. So the next steps for us as we move forward, we ask our federal partner to move into project development. It's a mother may, it's a pretty big step. TriMet will form a new steering committee, probably a smaller committee. That means we won't have Sherwood, we won't have King City. It'll be more constrained to the people that actually are touching their property, Washington County, TriMet, Metro, City Portland, Tigard, Tualatin, and Durham. More public, we'll form a new CAC. They've done yeoman's effort. We'll ask to re-engage that, and we'll ask for applications for that as we move forward. And we'll be advancing designs and engineering, working with SWEDS, another acronym, the Southwest Equitable Development Strategy. We'll be completing the environmental document. That's the final environmental document, and completing what you would call the CDR, but I may call a conceptual design report as we move forward. Big moment in November 2020. Have we painted a picture? Have we argued why people ought to be spending more on transportation? So that will be a choice for the voters in November 2020. We seek to secure federal funding against a very competitive process. What we've been good as a region by pulling together and doing that. And the light rail opening on a bright sunny day in September 2027. This is the same kind of schedule that if you don't like to read a lot of words, kind of does it graphically, but says the same thing. Eric?
Thank you. My name is Eric Engstrom. I manage the Comprehensive and Strategic Planning Program in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm going to talk about growth, land use, and housing in just a few slides. It's already been mentioned several times that the Southwest Corridor is expected to grow by a lot in the next 20 years, 70,000 people. Within Portland, and excluding South Waterfront and the Central City, the Portland portion of the Barber Corridor is zoned capacity for more than 10,000 new housing units, and that's enough to accommodate about 8% of the citywide 20-year growth forecast. We can do better than that, actually, and I'll talk about that in a minute. At least 3,000 of those homes could be within a block or two of the new station platforms in Portland. The Ross Island Bridgehead project area could also accommodate an additional few thousand additional new housing units, including 300 to 400 more on land currently occupied by highway ramps. As was also discussed last month, if we can successfully marshal new resources for the equitable housing strategy, our goal is that at least 700 units will be affordable to those at 60% of MFI. With existing resources, our minimum target is 350 units, which includes 150 new and 150 to 200 acquired or converted. Land is also a critical element of achieving the targets in the housing strategy, and has been mentioned earlier, there is a new agreement, MOU, with the project partners that speaks to that. Not all of the land acquired for the project will be needed long-term, so construction staging or parcels that are partially purchased but have land left over. So the MOU spells out a process by which there's an opportunity for cities to acquire some of that land to facilitate affordable housing as the project wraps up. City agencies are also exploring if there are ways that we can acquire property and make that land available to TriMet as part of our contribution to the project, also facilitating housing eventually. Next slide. As Metro noted, we planned this with land use in the lead. Within Portland, the Barber Concept Plan, which you adopted in 2013, identified those key places along the corridor that we wanted to serve and created a vision for some of the alignment choices that eventually were made. The preferred alignment connects those dots. There are key educational and employment destinations along the alignment, which you also already heard about. And you may recall that through the comprehensive plan, a number of those were upzoned and rezoned because we discovered during that process that those are some of the fastest growing sources of jobs in the city right now. And so this alignment also helps connect that employment and educational opportunity and in anticipation of more growth. Next slide. The 2035 comprehensive plan anticipated a transit investment in this corridor, and the Barber Capital Highway Crossroads is a town center in that plan, both in the city's plan and on the 2040 vision. Other town centers in the city include Lentz, Hollywoods, and St. John's. So we can do more with land use as the light rail plans solidify and our station locations become fixed points. And thanks to Metro funding, we're embarking on this year on a new land use plan for the West Portland Town Center. This new planning effort can help expand zoning capacity in and around the transit center and can be a vehicle to continue efforts to avoid displacement of existing residents, especially the communities of color and immigrant communities that have a foothold there. These are conceptual images, I should note, of the West Portland Town Center, what it could look like, both from a bird's eye view and a sidewalk level. But we'll use this process to figure out what we really want, if this or another vision is more compelling. And I also want to be clear that this is not about just what it will look like, but who it will be accessible to. Next slide. This project also fulfills some very long-term plans. The Ross Island Bridgehead Project is a concept that dates way back to Portland's very first neighborhood plans in the early 1970s, the Corbett Lair Hill Plan. Next slide. We're also beginning the process of updating the historic design guidelines in the South Portland Historic District and setting up a process to fine-tune land use around the Ross Island Bridgehead as that project evolves. This is an image of the Harvard Drive Expressway construction in 1940, and this was Portland's first freeway. And the section of it in South Portland is really a remnant today, that most of that highway was removed to build Waterfront Park. My last slide. This is an image of the Ross Island Bridgehead and what it could look like with a revitalized NATO Parkway. TriMet mentioned that the Barber alignment has been chosen, but that really creates an opportunity for a neighborhood main street on NATO as that is re-envisioned. The Gibbs, which is in the foreground of this image, is a critical east-west pedestrian and bike connection that helps make this land use vision work. It links the transit station with a revitalized NATO Parkway, South Waterfront, OHU, to Wilker Parkway, which you could argue is a destination in its own right. I'll pass it back to Teresa.
Thank you. So we have a lot of work coming up, a lot of technical work. We have environmental work to do, the CDR, the conceptual design report, and we'll be updating costs as well. So this really is outlined. We have a work plan, and it has been directed by the steering committee. That's, if you look at Exhibit A, that's attached to your resolution on pages 18 to 20, is a specific plan, and this is really intended to help guide our completion of the FEIS and do some of the other issues evaluation. We wouldn't be doing this process if it weren't with input and community engagement. Yeah, all right.
Close. You're too close to me.
I might be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that better? Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So we'll be having many meetings, emails, websites, lots of meetings with property owners. And in the near term, the things that we will be soliciting and getting feedback on have to do with a couple key topic areas. The crossroads alignment, as was mentioned previously, Markham Hill Connector, station locations, park and ride locations and sizes in a PCC shuttle. While that's going on, as Eric mentioned, BPS will be doing some evaluation of land uses, and we'll also be furthering the Ross Island Bridgehead. The conceptual design report, you've heard about it. Here it is. These are the three that I have been involved with, starting with Interstate Max, the downtown mall green line, and then the Portland-Milwaukee line. They're all available online. So the conceptual design report is a way of capturing the work efforts that we are doing over the next many months, and it is intended to illustrate in a clear and accessible way what the design elements are, how we've addressed issues, and it directs us for our future work. It has a strong community component, as do all of the individual technical analyses. It'll be coming to our Planning and Sustainability Commission. It will be coming to our Design Commission, and it will be coming to you. We expect to release the draft in this fall of 2019 with a final in early 2020. So I'm going to just hit these near-term topics that we're going to be talking about for you before we do public testimony. We'll start with the crossroads. So our steering committee chose B2. For those of you not playing along at home, that's a bridge alignment that flies over the crossroads on the south side of Barber Boulevard, and a Taylor's Ferry alignment that is also called Refinement 2. They asked us to evaluate these and consider a Smith alignment. Smith is one that was brought into us through our CAC by a neighborhood member. So we've started that evaluation work, and we've actually come up with more. You never want to get a bunch of engineers in the room and ask them to evaluate anything. We've got more. We have a Smith modified, and we also have a new alignment called Collins. So we met on Monday, as Dave indicated, to talk about these five alignment choices, and we'll be meeting again in early December, and my guess is we'll wrap up sometime in January, really looking for the steering committee to be able to provide an alignment selection in sometime in early 2019. These are pictures of the alignment options. I wouldn't spend a lot of time looking at them, but there are five of them, and they
Teresa,
bracket.
Sorry. There it is. We lost the picture. I think we're good.
You're good.
This is it?
No. Yeah.
Okay. They really bracket the crossroads area. The things we heard when we brought in the Taylor's Ferry option from the community are the ones listed above. Lots of concerns about really all the things that we need to look at. Traffic congestion, should we use Taylor's Ferry Road, impacts, environmental impacts, property impacts, and what it does to support or not support a vision for the town center. The technical considerations are below. That's the type of stuff that we also consider. So this is the Collins alignment, and it is on the north side of Barber Transit Center, which is the brown blob in the center. The idea would be that it would have a station area near the transit center and then cross under Capitol Highway using a very short tunnel segment. And then it would be on a bridge from leaving that tunnel and crossing over to I-5 in approximately the same length and similar orientation that the Taylor's Ferry would have. We have gotten a lot of feedback, actually, on this already. It's got its its interesting qualities, but we'll be continuing that analysis. Spreadsheets, and engineers like spreadsheets. This is out there. If any of you want to get these, I'll be happy to forward them to you. Where we'll be continuing to develop, we have a whole host of elements that we are reviewing and evaluating when we look at each one.
Teresa, before you move on, could you just explain to people at home why, and some who've written in with testimony, why not just continue on down the center of Barbara and fix the crossing of I-5 in the current
line? Right, so... us with acronyms, that was B1, because it was all of our initial thought that that's where light rail transit would go. It turns out that to add that light rail onto the existing Barber Bridge over I-5 means that you're replacing the entirety of that bridge. In and of itself, it's quite a feat, but it is substandard in terms of I-5 clearances below, and we have a tremendous amount of work to do to replace that bridge. To provide the clearance it needs, the whole bridge has to come up significantly, and it will affect property owners and property accessees, represents a lot of cost. And we have a concern that there's a risk element floating out there that as we do that realignment, we may be asked by the Federal Highway Administration to do some other things around the ramps. And for this particular project, that's simply a bridge too far.
Thank you.
So... we like B2, and we like Collins. This is the technical team. This is what we took to the neighborhood this week. We'll see what all their comments are, but we will continue to be moving forward. Part of these have to do with the fact that we do not have to replace the Crossroads Bridge, and the Barber World Foods is displaced. So I do just want to acknowledge, Commissioner Fritz, your concerns that you raised so capably in our work session about the Taylor's Ferry alignment, and I heard you, we all heard you loud and clear, and you were right, and we were wrong, and that... I'm saying it, that refinement to Taylor's Ferry alignment, it just doesn't work. It affects Barber World Foods. It affects traffic. And so we are looking elsewhere.
Getting lots of thumbs up behind you, Teresa. Thank you. That's very gracious.
We're going to talk about Markham Hill. These are renderings. Note they say sample concept. This is a vision, perhaps, of what could happen in terms of connecting from the transit center on Barber at Gibbs up to Markham Hill.
So could you just go back to that? Because that's something that's continued to baffle me since the work session. That gets you to Terwilliger, but it's really steep to get up to Terwilliger to get to the hospital.
There's another part. I can pull that up later if you'd like to look at that in a little more in detail.
Could you go back to that?
Sure.
So tell me just from procedurally, given what we're doing today, which is to accept the LPA, tell me where do the fine details on projects like that get hashed out?
Oh, I'm going to my next slide. Look at this.
Okay, thank you.
I got a whole slide of process, and this is just the start.
I agree with Commissioner Fritz. Just as I look at it, it looks like a major undertaking, and mm-hmm. I would have questions about that, and I want to make sure that by accepting the LPA, we're not accepting that as the final strategy there.
So I can confirm for you that what the steering committee has asked us to do is to evaluate connections up to Markham Hill. The rendering you saw is one concept, but we will be we'll be modeling ourselves on what we did when we decided where to build the Tillicum Crossing Bridge and deciding what that would look like. Very involved process. So we'll be forming a stakeholder committee in early 2019 that has representatives of the city, Friends of Terwilliger, the neighborhood associations, OHSU, TriMet, and Metro. And they're really going to peel it back and define the values that connection would need to have, evaluate the options, opening up the options, and considering our own regulatory framework that connection would reside within, and then recommend a type of connection to the steering committee.
So is it a fair characterization I really don't know the answer to this, is it fair to say it's highly conceptual? How would you characterize this in the course of what we are doing here today?
I would say it's pretty conceptual.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think there's what we heard when we stepped away from the tunnel underneath the Markham Bridge that would have started further into downtown was, when we stepped away, let's make sure we don't lose that contact to OHSU, Markham Hill, and the Parkway. It's really important. And so we know we've done some evaluation, looked at like inclines and things like that earlier on, and came to these are the most promising. But we've held this off because we know that this is an important area, and this is very difficult. So we're going through trees. We're going near a parkway. We're going through neighborhoods. It's got to be done well. And in doing that, I think we've recognized that a stakeholder committee that can weigh all of those with public input, that then goes to a steering committee that has public input, that goes through environmental impact statement, and then ends up going through two different land uses at the City of Portland, one for environmental and one for design, there's a lot of opportunity. So we don't have it right. We know we don't have it right. What we're saying is, by this LPA, this is a really important connection, we believe. That's what we heard from our steering committee. That's what we heard from the public testimony. That's what we heard from our citizens advisory committee. Let's try and make this connection. How you exactly do it, there's not certainty on that, and okay. Hopefully this process helps do that.
I want to agree with you that in concept, it would be a huge lost opportunity not to connect this to OHSU. I think that would be almost ridiculous.
Yeah. The question, though, is where to connect.
And how?
One of the amendments that Commissioner Udalian and her staff have already accepted in the substitute exhibit that we have before us is to add to the Markham Hill and Portland Community College connections, an additional phrase to consider options avoiding crossing Terwilliger Parkway. So in other words, not doing that at all, but doing it maybe from the mall or somewhere else.
Good. And I was going to let Commissioner Udaly introduce the substitute when we're done with the presentation, but I couldn't miss this opportunity right here with the schematic. Right,
appreciate that.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about PCC, another very important place to connect with this project. These orange blobs on my screen represent places where students are traveling today to go to Portland Community College. In the lower right-hand corner, you'll see some information that we have about mode split. And really, the striking one for us is that 10% of students currently use transit. That's in such a contrast to, say, Portland State University, where the majority of the students are taking transit. It's a long connection for them. They have parking up on the hill that is it's challenging. And as we know, with our looking at affordable housing, transportation choices, and what one has to pay to maintain a car really affect the funds that people have to spend on their daily lives. So finding a way without a tunnel to connect this light rail project to PCC and provide a meaningful opportunity for students, administrators, and staff to get to the college is very important to us. So the steering committee has asked us to look at some bus shuttle options. The one in purple is a loop, effectively, that would bring students from Tigard to PCC and Barber Transit Center. This is in addition to the normal bus service that would be planned for the region, but it would have that efficient connection. The other one we are looking at is a connection on Southwest 53rd from a station at 53rd. And as I note, we would be improving 53rd. We would be improving 53rd because, like so many of our streets in Southwest, it is a gravel road, a hilly gravel road at that. And it's a quarter mile to the edge of campus, all uphill if you'd be coming from the transit station, and another quarter mile to get into the heart of campus. We have a park that adjoins it. There's Southwest Trails access through there. And our project wants to improve this street with pavement and sidewalks and streetlights and all the things that make it safe and comfortable for somebody walking or cycling, and also provide that connectivity for the neighborhood and potential use by a shuttle. We have every intention, however, of retaining the gate that is currently at the end of where the PCC campus line is on the map on the right. There's currently a gate that prevents vehicular traffic from going through. Another thing we'll be doing is taking
a shuttle would go through, I presume.
Shuttle would go through.
The PCC master plan doesn't allow vehicular access at that point. So how would that be dealt with?
So, that's good.
with the new comprehensive plan that the council adopted last year, we've shifted and rezoned the campuses so that the master plan sunset in the next couple of years. So that's been replaced with a with new zoning that has been applied to those campuses. Significant new development on the campuses would trigger a new transportation impact review, which is would enable a discussion of circulation and traffic. So if we tried to open that up for general vehicle traffic, that certainly would be a legit issue to discuss during that review. But so it doesn't preclude a discussion of that in the future, but the what the campus master plan says may not preclude this.
That's really distressing because there was a big public process to decide where access to PCC would